So 1.7% right now. For Biden, it was down 1.7%. For Obama, it was down 0.3%. For Bush, it was down 0.6%. For Clinton, it was down 0.6%. For the first Bush term, it was down 3%. Even under Reagan, it was down almost 1%. But here's what's more interesting, Brian. Right now, the national unemployment rate is 4.2%. For construction workers, it's 3.5%. Know where it was in January?
What?
6.5. You think about how dramatic that is in such a short period of time. Manufacturing unemployment, 3.6% from 3.9%. Non-durable goods, 3.7% now. We started the year 5.2%. Mining, oil, and gas extraction, 4.2%. We started the year 5%. This is dramatic. This is mind-boggling stuff, what we're seeing right now. The speed, how do you get an unemployment rate to go from 6.5% to 3.5% in 5 months?
Charles Payne will tell you, and the answer is this administration, Donald Trump. Some of the stories that tend to go unnoticed when the headlines, and there are multiple headlines, are so big and world-changing that you don't really talk about this stuff. Welcome back to the Andy Fry Show. Thank you for being with us here today. Yes, we had a company holiday yesterday, so we were not here in acknowledgement of Juneteenth, but we're back and we are very happy to be. When you think about the fact that the Fed continued to not lower rates, held them steady, I'm seeing more and more people reacting to this and saying that it's ridiculous that the Fed hasn't lowered these rates. In the middle of all of this, I heard it was in regards to the LA riots / protests that some leftists, I think it was, who's the woman on The Five? Jessica Tarloff. Yes, sorry. Thank you.
I had to
ask it in order to answer my own question.
I wanted credit for knowing it.
You get credit.
Thank you.
You said that as I was thinking it. She said that she wanted the message. She wanted the left to stop making the message about immigration and these ICE raids. And she wanted it to start being more about the economy. And I, like, when I hear that, I'm like, what message? About the economy, like, where do you win shifting on that issue? Again, knowing that Donald Trump has only been in office now, which is crazy to think about, 151 days. We're halfway through his next 100 days. 151 days. And it's June 20th, so I guess that's 5 months total. Yeah. This is a lot of economic turnaround in a short amount of time. And a lot of the economic policy that he wanted to implement, the actual signing of the Big Beautiful Bill, which isn't complete yet, the Senate still has to have their way with it. Rescissions packages that need to be done in order to fortify the DOGE cuts. Every time I have a White House person on or somebody who's talking, you know, maybe it's a congressman or something, I always mention, you know, one of the major criticisms that people have about the Big Beautiful Bill is that it doesn't go far enough on implementing the waste, fraud, and abuse DOGE findings to cut that spending. And they're always quick to say, well, not to get into the weeds, but. And I'm like, you guys need to go dig out those weeds and show them to the American people that the DOGE cuts cannot be implemented in a package that has to go through the Senate in reconciliation, which makes it something that only has to have a simple majority. Otherwise, it would have to be 60 votes. Is that right?
Yes.
So in order to move legislation through the Senate and make it so that it is a simple majority, there are particular things that guidelines, barriers that they have to live in. Is it the Byrd rule? Gosh, see, I know all of these things and I'm studying this on a regular basis and it's still super complicated. As they say, not to get into the weeds, but I think it really does matter that there are things that they are going to intend to do with the DOGE cuts that they simply can't put in the Big Beautiful Bill because then it would need 60 votes and they're not going to get 60 votes. So you have a president who's leading on this issue, navigating a super slim majority in the House with very polar differences in what we see from like the New York Republican representation and then the alternative and the Masseys and the Chip Roys. They want very different things. And then in the Senate, you've got the Rand Pauls and the Ron Johnsons who are trying to affect the outcome of what the Senate bill looks like there. It's not done yet, but I have every confidence that they're going to get it done. So when you watch the left, look at what's taking place on immigration, and the president is not losing support on his efforts to rectify 4 years of Joe Biden's thumbprint on illegal immigration in this country. On top of his initial campaign in 2016, was there a phrase that was bigger than build the wall? I mean, that was kind of the biggest thing that he came out and said. And America was like, yeah, we should probably do that. People were saying, oh, the wall is racist, which was ironic when Kamala Harris was like, we should maybe build more wall in her 100 days of running for president. The Democrat Party right now is the aggressive progressives, and the far, far left are all over the ICE raids, all over the immigration pursuit to make illegal immigration a thing of the past, to make legal immigration a thing of the future in this country. That's the president's focus and goal. The crazies on the left are trying to make it seem like you're going to get snatched out of your bed at night. The more moderate on the left, or at least the more politically savvy on the left, know that this is not a winning issue with the American public. That issue is one of the issues that sent President Trump to the Oval Office in November of 2024. So they're like, shift to the economy. Are there things that could go better with the economy? Yes. Is it heading in the right direction? Are there any places, Ryan, and you like to pay attention a lot to economic news as it rolls in, are there any areas of the economy that aren't at least stopped from continuing down the treacherous path they're on? Maybe they haven't like done the about face and turned around and now they're completely on the better path. Is there anything that's gotten worse?
Worded that way, no. There's nothing that's gotten worse. There are things that have not changed as fast as you'd hope.
As
fast as I'd hope.
Because it's a priority for you.
But I think, you know, we were talking about Jessica Tarlov a minute ago and her, you know, why don't we focus more on the economy thing? Well, that's saying something because what she's citing is probably polling that still has Donald Trump far and away leading with the American people on immigration. So she wants, of course, to shift away from immigration.
That's a definitively losing issue for the left.
Yes. And so she's like, why are we talking about this so much? Let's move away from that. Let's focus more on the economy. Well, oddly, the only reason she wants to do that is because the polling suggests that Donald Trump isn't focused enough on the economy, on prices going down. But if you shift the news narrative to be more about that, then everybody will perceive that that's the main issue. So there is really nothing that he's doing that you could shift to that isn't going well.
That's a disaster.
That's right.
To the point, the way I phrase that question for you first is like, economically speaking, where are Americans going, oh my gosh, I can't believe I voted for this? The question that the left and mostly the never Trumpers on the right continued to say is like, did you really vote for this? And we're like, yeah. yes, emphatically yes. I don't expect the president to fix everything in 151 days. I think the progress that he's making on every issue is exciting to see, knowing that there's still runway left before we get completely into the midterms. A lot of the promises that he's made have come to fruition or are almost closed. I think we're seeing positive outcomes on the tariffs. We're seeing that he's flexible and he wants to negotiate, but that the entire preface of his administration is he's ready to be the person who makes the world treat the United States of America fairly. And again, America first is not America alone, but it's also not America last. And that certainly is what the Biden administration has been implementing in this country for 4 years under whose guidance, I don't know. This week, we saw that the Senate yesterday, I believe it was, they convened their investigation into who was running the country when Joe Biden was president. And I think eventually two Democrats showed up to that Senate hearing. But they started it off with no Democrats there. That's almost more telling to me. If the Democrats had in spades that Joe Biden was fully at the wheel, that he was fully in his capacity running the country, that would be easy to prove. there would be questions that you could ask that would have answers that would show the entire country and the entire world that Joe Biden was fully. Just because you don't like what he was doing doesn't mean he wasn't there. The worst thing that could happen for those Democrats politically is that they end up in some sort of hearing where there are clips that the Republicans use against their Democrat colleagues that show that they, too, don't have their hands at 10 and 2 on the wheel. And any sort of complicit responsibility that they might have had, any sort of abdicated responsibility that they might have had in the last 4 years, should they have been in office during Biden's administration, that they went along with it. I think that's the most frightening thing for probably the entirety of Washington, D.C. right now, is if the Republicans, and I say that because the Democrats didn't show up, if the Republicans are successful in exposing how incapacitated Joe Biden was for 4 years, then the entire party is responsible for not calling it out and getting to the bottom of it. I think the only person who completely gets off the hook is the Democrat who run against him in the primary, who won American Samoa. What was his name? I can't remember. That's a problem.
He's from Minnesota. I can't remember his name either.
Jessica Tarlov. Probably not. That guy came out in the open against everything and said, I don't think that Joe Biden's up for the job. And nobody, and his entire campaign was essentially, nobody else is stating the obvious. We have no alternative here. The Democratic Party is not stepping in and doing anything right now to offer the American people the opportunity to act on what I see, what I know you see, what everybody sees in this president. Where is the Democrat Party on this? Nobody else is doing it. I see it, and I can't keep my mouth shut about it. I guess I'll step in and offer an alternative.
Dean Phillips.
Dean Phillips of American Samoa fame.
Yeah, okay, yes.
He's the one guy who I'm like, I respect you. Enough in the future that I'll try to remember your name.
Even he wasn't really calling attention to dementia, though. He was just saying, well, we need a different path.
Well, I mean, if you're going to call somebody out in your circle, in your orbit, maybe even someone who you care about, and you know that if they're driving the car and they're not capable and you're all supposed to be riding in the car, there's a nice way that you can be like, maybe somebody else should drive the car. Or like you lure them out of the car for, I don't know, ice cream. And then when you get back, someone else is in the driver's seat. Like, oh, I really love this car and I'd really like to just give it a try. Do you mind letting me? And the whole time everyone's like, oh, thank God.
Thank God Dean Phillips is here to drive.
Yeah, what's his name again?
Sorry, American Samoa is like, yeah, we see you.
Yeah, totally. Trying to put Dean Phillips on the map.
Mm-hmm.
To which I would say to people, show me on a map where American Samoa is.
Minnesota was like, who?
Oh, man. I'm looking at what is 150 days into this presidency, and I'm watching. You know, I feel like Donald Trump and the Republicans are succeeding. I give them an A. I feel like what I voted for is happening. But of course, I have a perspective. Of course, there are a lot of people who think that these policies are terrible. We have different opinions on it. Totally fine. Completely respect it. But I'm always going to look at my opponent and say, what area of the field are they going to try to win on? What area of the field am I weak on? You know, the proverbial bat last play right field kid. Where is that for? No offense to any all who play right field or whose kids play right field. My kids played right field before. When
your kids got a gun for an arm.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that now. That's why we put them out there.
But when you're looking at the Republican Party and like trying to find where the weakness is so that the Democrats can attack that, either the Republicans don't have a weakness or the Democrats haven't found it yet. Because the Democrats are listless. And the closest thing to a weakness that I feel like the Republicans could have had is Donald Trump's personality. And the American people have known him for quite some time now, and they chose him in spite of any sort of messaging that was out there about Donald Trump's personality. That's the YouTube live chat poll for today. Hold on to your butts. Is President Trump humble? Yes or no? I cannot wait. Predict right now the results on this poll by the end of the show, Ryan.
55% yes.
55 yes. Ryan, you got any thoughts? Predictions?
Ethan.
Ethan, you got any thoughts? I was like, why isn't he looking at me?
His name's Ethan.
Yeah, Ethan. Sorry.
You were talking to me.
Yeah, I was. Sorry. It was hard to tell because I said your coworker's name here. You have any predictions on how this will...
I think it's going to be pretty close to 50-50. I do. Because I think a lot of people align with more so the way that you have. Not, I don't want to give away your answer, but I think...
I don't know if I know my answer.
Price is Right. You got to put a percentage on it.
Okay, fine. I will say... I'll say 60-40 in favor of
I was
yes.
going to say 70-30 in favor of yes.
Ooh, okay.
So I'm the most confident that our audience thinks he's humble.
Okay.
But I also know that you all don't care whether he's humble or not if he's getting the job done. And I don't know. That's why we're asking you the question. Please flood the YouTube live chat poll with your thoughts and votes on this question. If we get a lot of feedback there, we might open the phones and let you guys call in and tell us what you think. Is President Trump humble? Yes or no? YouTube.com/@AnnieFry. When we return, Joey Jones is going to be with us. You see him on Fox News. He's wonderful to watch and to listen to, a great different perspective. He's the author of a new Fox News book, Behind the Badge. I'm going to talk to Joey Jones a little bit about the people who have served in our generation. What is it like to come back to this country? Of course, generationally speaking, we have the greatest generation. We have the Vietnam vets who came back and were treated terribly. What is it like to have served in modern warfare and to be living in this country now? Joey Jones next.
From the son of a millionaire skipping the family business to be a firefighter to a police officer joining the force after her brother died in the line of duty. These are the real life stories of America's first responders that Joey Jones is highlighting in his brand new book. It's called Behind the Badge, and it is out today. He joins us now. Congratulations.
I'm so excited. Thank you so much for having
me
on. This is, sometimes you write a book and you're thinking, I had something to say. This time I'm writing a book and nine individuals who have served this country and their community. It's not so much they have something to say, it's that they've lived through something and I get to help share it.
You know, this is the other side of, we're talking every day this week and leading up to it about the conflict between Israel and Iran. And we've harkened back to people who have served, who have been at the behest of the funded terrorism that has existed through Iran. And at the really root of all of these stories are real people who have signed up, who have put themselves in danger to protect America, to defend what they believe in. They've taken oaths to protect Americans, whether it's on the homeland or overseas. And these stories are so important for us to know about and to hear. And fortunately for us, Joey Jones has written the book on it, Behind the Badge. And we have the author with us here today. Joey, welcome back to the show. Thank you for being with us here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Thanks for talking about this. I'm really excited about it.
You know, I'm not sure of your specific age. I'm 40. I graduated high school September 11th. My classmates watched the towers fall down, and then they turned 18, and I had multiple who signed up to serve after that, and they've got all very, very different walks of life, very different stories after that moment. And I don't think that they're talked about enough. It's kind of a quiet group of veterans who have come back, who have served. Several of them have retired with their full amount of service. Talk to me about what it's like to be a voice for some of these people.
Yeah. So, you know, this book Behind the Badge is focused on first responders, and a lot of them are veterans. In the book, I've got nine first responders, and I think four of them are veterans. And one of them lived in down in Panama when things got hairy. So he knows a little bit about a little bit about combat even before he served as a sheriff. And I don't know that I'm a voice for veterans or a voice for these folks, but I certainly want to lend my platform so their voice is heard. And that's what's important to me.
I think it is important. We've seen, too, in the last 10, 15 years, law enforcement, the way that we have disrespected culturally law enforcement, who have had to step in some very hairy times here on the homeland, that bringing attention to the humanity that exists behind all of these people, that's incredibly important as well. Do you feel like in talking to these people whose story you're telling, do you feel like people are still very proud to serve behind the badge?
I think that's probably the one thread that sews them all together. I mean, in the book, we start with two firemen. One's my brother-in-law. The other one's a guy I've known since I was 3 years old. They just happen to work together. And we start with their stories. And then Keith Dempsey, my brother-in-law, one of the first things he says is, you know, we don't get in on the fire service, we don't get the negative that the police officers get. And I don't know how they continue to do their job as police officers. And as I interviewed, I've got SWAT team and a state trooper and a police officer and a LAPD bomb squad member. And the consistent thing among all of them is that, yeah, the mental toll sucks. And it's not just the negative from people protesting, but from seeing us do terrible things to each other and seeing freak accidents hurt us so bad. And to be a part of that and to be a part of cleaning it up or hopefully, you know, making things right, that sucks. But the mission of doing it is more important than their own peace of mind. And so I think it extends beyond pride. I don't think they think of it in terms of I'm proud to be a police officer. It's I'm honored to be a police officer. I get to be a police officer. I get to be a fireman. I get to be the one that shows up when other people wouldn't. And the one that shows up when the rest of us just walk out our doors every day and say, you know, we don't say anything. We just jump in our car and take off. And we know that if something goes bad, somebody will be there.
Yeah, something that you've kind of highlighted here a little bit in our discussion, but I've also reading it in the book description, is how much of a family affair this often is. You were talking about your own family members who are involved in serving behind the badge, but that people, there's a sense of duty that comes just out of honoring those members who are in their family who came before them to say, yeah, okay, it's my turn.
I think for some people, you don't, I think for a lot of folks in the book, especially the Caitlin Kotfila, her story is just amazing. She was graduating in Connecticut. Her brother's a cop down in Tampa. He does something incredibly heroic, essentially sacrifices himself to interdict a car going the wrong way so it doesn't hit another car. And he dies in the line of duty. So she goes down to his funeral and decides, you know what, I'm going to come and take his place on the force. And to be inspired that way, she comes from a cop family, her dad, uncles, everyone served in law enforcement in some capacity. And she talks about that. And she talks about, like, you know, she could never sneak out because her dad was a detective and could figure it out quick. But she talks about how, you know, she didn't think she was going to go be a police officer until that happened with her brother. And what blows my mind about that is common sense would say that would be a great reason not to do that, you know, but that's not how it works for them. That their sense of duty is elevated beyond what most Americans understand.
It needs to be acknowledged. It really needs to be discussed. As you've been watching some of the behavior that has been displayed in Los Angeles during these protests/riots, depending on, you know, where we're talking about at any given time. We're here in St. Louis. Ferguson is, you know, spitting distance away from where we are right now. We've seen this really grow, this anti-police sentiment grow to the extent that it becomes marketable, really, which is to me the grossest part of the anti-law enforcement first responder sentiment, that something that isn't necessarily even true, like the hands up, don't shoot lie that came out of our area, then becomes a slogan and then people start fundraising off of it. Why do you think that people are so quick to jump on this anti-law enforcement sentiment, at least that they were? And it does feel like maybe we've moved away from that at this point.
I think it's different for each people. I mean, if you're talking about the rich white liberals that leave Columbia to go protest, it's because they've hadn't had anything difficult happen in their lives and they're looking for something to be passionate about and have a cause to fight for, and that's just what's put in front of them. I mean, that is a problem. I mean, I'm not saying everyone in this country is pampered. That's not what I mean at all. But compared to the rest of the world, pretty much we are. And so you have a class of people who haven't had their big struggle and they feel inadequate. So they go and jump on someone else's. If you're talking about communities of color that feel like they've been mistreated and arrested too much, it's a lot easier to blame somebody else than to be introspective. And so there are a lot of people that feel like, you know, you wouldn't have arrested somebody if they looked different and didn't use the same dialect I do. It's like, well, that may be true. And if it is true, root that cop out. But also, that doesn't change the fact that you did something wrong and you did something that people get arrested for. So maybe, you know, like my dad told me, hey, listen, son, if you don't give them any reason to, you got a lot better chance of not getting pulled over or going to jail. And that's from a kid that speeds too much, I'll tell you that now. But when I do get pulled over, I know in that moment the game is up, right? Like, I took a risk, I did something illegal, and now somebody's pulling me over. What I do, I'm going to pull my truck over, I'm going to put my hands out the window with my ID in it, turn it off, and if I've got a firearm in there, let him know when he gets there. We as a society have to take accountability for ourselves. We asked for police officers. We asked for law and order. That's what creating a society is. If you're going to ask for it and you're going to exercise your rights, then you also have to exercise the ability to understand when you've done something wrong. And I think that's the problem we have in this country.
How do you feel about with the sentiment taking place right now currently in our country, specifically with ICE, Tom Homan at the head of that, man, he speaks, he cuts straight through it. He gets right to the point when he's talking about the things that he's seen in his leadership of ICE, that the horrors of what not policing this type of crime of coming across the border illegally, like what that can lead to when we kick the door wide open and just tell everybody to come in. I mean, he has true clarity in what he's trying to accomplish. And then the other political sentiment is just that they're trying to snatch people out of their beds at night who have never done anything wrong. Do you have any advice, having talked to real people who have served in law enforcement, do you have any advice for the American people who are consuming both sides of these stories to like take a deep breath and try to find the absolute truth in what is taking place and what these law enforcement individuals are trying to accomplish?
I mean, it's pretty simple, right? Like, you're not going to go looking for bad PR. You're not going to go doing things like, and almost all these have been debunked. They showed up at an elementary school. Actually, they didn't. I forgot what the latest one was this week, but it was something along
the
those
Dodgers?
Lines. Showed up at, yeah, you know, Dodgers. Yeah, the Dodgers game. That's what it was. Yeah. It's like, no, they're not going to go looking for negative PR. They're looking for individuals who have a rap sheet. But if they apprehend that individual and there are six other illegals with them, well, Trump's told them, hey, we need to get the numbers up. We need to get these people out of here. Why would they just turn the blind eye to those people? There's a difference between going searching for people that don't have an extra criminal record, but also deporting those that got here illegally that get wrapped up because we're hanging out with those that do. And that's essentially what's happening. I really wish Kristi Noem and Tom Homan would kind of message that a little clearer for Americans. And I'm sure they have their hands full, and there's a lot of reasons why, you know, holding everyone's hand through the messaging isn't their priority. But that's a big part of it. I come from a town that's majorly Hispanic, most of them Mexican, Dalton, Georgia. Look it up. And in that town, we had a young lady who was driving a truck. One of the police officers, this happened just 2 weeks ago, one of the police officers got a call, a black truck had driven through an intersection or done something unsafe. He went towards the intersection. Her truck was the next one he saw. He didn't get a great description of the truck, so he pulls her over to see if she's the one. When he pulls her over, he finds out not only is she illegal, she qualified for DACA, but she didn't do any paperwork for it. Not only is she illegal, but she's driving and has been, you know, her whole adult life without ever even applying for a driver's license. So he takes her to jail. And that's exactly what I would expect to happen to me if I were just driving around without a driver's license, not even ever passing a test for one. That's what should happen. When she gets to jail, well, I mean, this Georgia, we cooperate with ICE. ICE finds her, they take her, and they detain her. Now, they end up letting her go because she qualifies for DACA, even though she hasn't done any of the paperwork to be protected by it. But the whole moral of the story is that the Democrats take this young lady to Capitol Hill and turn her into a martyr when she's done all of this to herself. I mean, her parents came here illegally. The Biden administration, through the courts, gave her a path to legal residency, and she couldn't be bothered to even do that. I have very little sympathy for her, and ICE isn't doing anything wrong by deporting people that are here illegally, regardless of whatever the criminal record is.
Yeah, they're just doing their jobs. I want to encourage people to check out Joey Jones's new book. It's called Behind the Badge. Before we let you go, Joey, if people, my understanding is these are smaller stories, so it's a very simple book to read through and take as you go, but you're telling individual stories. What do people walk away after they've read this book feeling and having learned?
Yeah, listen, your worst day in your life, and I talk about mine in there, my dad essentially dying in front of me, is another shift for them, for first responders. That's just another day on the job for them. But you have to understand, they do feel it. They feel it every single day. They care about the people that they work on. And when they can't save you or they can't save your home, that sticks with them forever. And the fact that there are people out there who can deal with that, who can soak that in and carry that weight and still do the job and still show up and be dad or mom or whomever, husband, wife, it's really remarkable. And I think you walk away from this realizing you don't have to be Chicago Fire or in New York on 9/11 to have these impactful, amazing stories. Because if you're a first responder in this country, no matter how big or small the town, you've seen it, you felt it, you responded to it, and you've probably saved somebody's life.
Amen to that. And you've told those stories here. The book is called Behind the Badge, and it's by Joey Jones. Thanks for being with us today, Joey. I hope you have great success with telling this story. It's a story that needs to be told, and I'm glad you did it. Thank you for being with us today.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. Behind the Badge, Joey Jones, Fox News contributor. Of course, you know him. He lost his legs in combat, and telling us a brief version of the story about losing his father in front of him. It's just a very tragic event. But these stories that are included in Behind the Badge encourage you to get that and check it out and support the effort that Joey Jones is trying to make here in getting these stories out. We love law enforcement here, specifically on the Annie Fry Show in 97.1. And are honored to be able to help Joey tell that story. On a quick break right now, Be or Not the Bee with Ryan Wiggins next. And we need to get you in on the Annie Fry YouTube channel. Come say hi. Come subscribe if you haven't. I'm trying to grow the show on the Annie Fry YouTube channel. The YouTube live chat poll is President Trump humble? Yes or no? A reminder also, if you're looking to take 97 with you, 97.1 FM Talk with you anywhere you go, the Odyssey app, it works anywhere you have a phone connection. AUDACY. You can listen to all sorts of Odyssey radio stations there, but of course we prefer you listen to ours. Find 97.1 there, the Annie Fry Show there. You can see the podcast and everything. Quick break, Be or Not the Bee next. We can go wherever, so let's do it now.
The Bee or Not the Bee. All right, you guys, tell me whether these are real or fake news. I'll give you the headline, and if it's from the Babylon Bee, that would be fake. Otherwise, it's real. Here's the first one. United States will abandon 2 alcoholic drinks per day recommendation.
Real.
That's not very funny, so I'm going to go with real.
But think, consider the time that we're
in. Don't talk us into the wrong answer. Just read the story.
All right, it's real.
A little depressing.
I heard the story this morning on Outnumbered.
Yeah.
No, or what Harris Faulkner show.
After years of Americans being told to limit alcoholic beverages to 1 or 2 drinks per day, Reuters says Health and Human Services and the USDA are about to lift that recommendation restriction and replace it with the more ambiguous moderate intake suggestion.
Gosh, she's making America great again, one drink at a time.
Well, they say it's based on the facts. They say there's simply not any evidence to support the 1 to 2 drinks number.
Also,
it's made up.
The difference between, you can't say two drinks is the same as like the height weight BMI chart.
Yeah.
Like if you say I'm this tall and I weigh this much, like the way that you carry that weight is going to differ from person to person. The way you handle 2 drinks, if you're a 6'4" 270-pound linebacker or whatever, versus some petite little female.
Yeah, you're 21.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like you can't just throw something out there. But who benefits from, like, if they're getting rid of it? Also, I didn't know that it was like a government suggested thing.
Apparently, it is.
Like, big alcohol? who's better? I'm always like, where's the money going or not going now?
Well, who's going to the bar ever in history and going, what did the government suggest I do here? The government say I should have 3 drinks or 2? I can't remember. I'll just
only
err on the
checking
side
to know, like, I think I'll have 4.
Yeah, right.
We know who wasn't. Kamala Harris.
Wait, time out. Do you guys really? Yeah, shot from the back.
Wow, wasn't expecting, but okay.
Do you think that there's any factual basis to Kamala Harris drinking too much?
I mean, I can't find the public evidence, but yes, I think that she drank.
You do?
I don't think
she did. I was just being funny.
Ethan, you're a no.
I'm a no.
I have a theory on this. I don't think she drinks too much. I think she's that dumb, and drinking too much is more beneficial to Kamala Harris than being that dumb.
It was like Drunken Master.
I don't know what that means.
It was a movie. It was a kung fu movie.
That's why I don't know what
it means. Where he was unbelievably good at karate and jiu-jitsu, but only when he was drunk.
I don't know that. No, I'm just saying that there are 2 explanations for
Kamala
Harris.
Sounds like a Wiggins movie to me.
There are 2 explanations for who Kamala Harris is. One is she drinks too much. The other is that she's just really that stupid.
That could be both.
It could be, but it's likely one or the other at minimum. And I think that she's that dumb. I don't know that she drinks more than other people. I think that's just who she is. And I think the alcohol story rumor is a cover that she's willing to accept.
I think that she actually is that bad at communicating. I don't know if she's dumb, but she's definitely not smart. And also she drinks. So that's
it's possible.
Just me.
But I will say, as somebody who thanks God every night that she is not the president of the United States, that I don't know of any factual foundational information to prove that she's a drunk.
I don't know of any.
It's just too easy to say.
It is.
And they're not like really refuting it, although it's kind of a rough thing to have to refute. But again, I think you're like, no, I don't drink. I'm just
that bad at talking.
Anyway, sorry.
All right. So that one's real. In solidarity with protesters, Burger King changes name to Burger Democratically Elected Leader.
B.
Yes, that's the B.
No kings.
CEO of Burger King Corporation Tim Berger said, quote, "We are sorry that our company's name has been used to spread pro-monarchist feelings throughout the country." Protesters are reportedly appreciative of the show of solidarity by the fast food titan, even if it's not the result they were really looking for. Quote, "We were kind of hoping Trump would suddenly cease to exist, but I'll take a new name for Burger King," said unemployed protester and body positive activist Barb Farnsworth.
Okay.
I like that name.
Sounds like a 74-year-old, highly educated, single white lady.
I like the CEO of Burger King Corporation's name being Tim Berger.
Spelled E-R-G-R. G-E-R.
San Francisco protesters spell out "no king" with sidewalk poop.
Oh, man. You had me till the end.
You know, this is one that could go either way, but I'm going to go with the B.
B.
It's the B. Quote, "This will show Trump how much better off we are without his policies," shouted one angry San Franciscan as he sculpted handfuls of excrement into the giant letter N.
Nasty.
Is that what they're called? San Franciscans?
Now. Friends at San Franciscots. What else is there?
That's it.
The San Franciscanese.
The San Francisco treat.
You could call all people treats. At publishing time, the protesters had used some of the leftover sidewalk poop to create a life-size sculpture of Governor Gavin Newsom.
Ew, is poop one of the funniest words that exists?
Yeah, definitely. Okay.
Top three.
I can't tell you how many times I'm watching a show and it's like a drama, and I just start cracking up thinking about like a doctor walking into the ER and being like, "Hi, I'm Dr. Poop." I'm like, that would ruin this show.
You can't tell me how many times you think that
thought? Oh, it's so often. That's awful. Like, I'll hear an ad somewhere. They'll be like, "Hey, I'm Dr. So-and-so." I'm like, "Dr. Poop." Dr. Poop.
You're all 11 years old.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's real. I'm not making that up. I actually do crack up thinking about that.
We get
the time.
We believe you.
Vice President Vance's Blue Sky account banned 15 minutes after joining.
Facts. Blue Sky is
liberal Twitter.
Yeah. And they. No kings over there.
They believe in freedom for all.
Of them.
Of them, as long as you agree with them.
This is real.
This is a real story. Why did they ban him? Well, Vice President shared his thoughts on a 6-3 ruling for the Supreme Court that upheld Tennessee's ban on sex change operations for kids for that fringe position supported by the majority of Americans, the White House, the Supreme Court. Vance was banned.
That's what we call harmful rhetoric, Ryan. Get it straight.
Most likely what happened is the account was taken down temporarily because the lefties reported his account en masse the moment they saw him on the platform.
Yeah, that's what's the word? Triggered.
And it triggered an internal review. You didn't even know.
I did know.
Glad to see the coexist people never change.
This is not a fun way to live.
It's pretty amazing.
We spent 4 years of watching Joe Biden ruin the country and we're dismayed by it. But somehow here we are still living.
What I could not and still not cannot believe is when people who are fine with banning the president of the United States from a platform like Twitter before Elon owned it. And cutting these people off from public dialogue, the president of the United States, we're also the ones going, "You guys ban books. You guys hate free speech."
The banning books thing makes me the most mad.
Yes.
Because we are like, we want to ban pornography from children.
Book banner?
Isn't that about it?
It's like Fahrenheit 451 in here.
Isn't unbelievable.
Isn't that really the extent of what conservative, like, we That's don't it. Want porn in front of our children in our publicly funded public schools?
Yes.
You can go buy that crap on Amazon and show it to your kid in this free country, but we don't want the taxpayers to be funding it. And they're like, they're banning books again. And we're like, no, that's not. You can still access the books.
Yes, you can still access them. That means they're not banned. We just don't want them in schools. All right. Liberal parents devastated. Speaking of which, liberal parents devastated after finding books hidden under kids' bed written by J.K. Rowling.
Honey, I found a publication under the child's bed. Oh, no, I don't want to have that conversation. It's about the wizards.
It's a Harry Potter book. According to... Yeah, thank you. According to Gary... no last name.
Gary!
According to Gary, the Rowling books seem to have already turned his child's head. Quote, they've been completely corrupted, Gary said. It's like a gateway drug. First Rowling, and now they're dressing in gender binary affirming jeans. Every time I'd knock on their door.
Gender binary affirming.
Gender binary affirming jeans.
Not gender affirming.
Right. I'd hear a guilty start and the book slamming shut hastily, and they'd come out with a huge red face. I caught 3 server requests for the Daily Wire on our internet firewall last night.
He's a goner. He's a goner.
It's just so disappointing to see my child doing this to themselves. At publishing time, the Brennison's parents' fears had only grown after finding a Bible hidden in their child's pillowcase.
The humanity would do such a thing.
B.
Yeah, that was B.
The B.
Yeah.
Are we out now at 50?
Yes.
All right. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, Senator Jim Talent is going to be with us. Lots of questions to ask him. If you have questions that you would like me to ask the former senator from the state of Missouri, Jim Talent, about the conflict, war between Israel and Iran, get on the Annie Fry YouTube channel and let us know. Vote. Is President Trump humble? YouTube live chat poll. We'll be right back.